I just found out machete don't Snapchat. That's a thing that I just found out.
Machete don't Snapchat.
The wonderful things you bring into my life. You have no idea. I mean, really, my quality of living is so much better. I feel bad for everybody that doesn't know you. They can't do this. It's really, my whole week would have been less good. All right. Anyways, my name is Eric. This glorious human specimen sitting in my FaceTime window is Michael Kester. And we're talking about the Romero films today.
Yeah, we are. Not all the Romero films.
No.
Just the Romero of the Dead films.
Yeah, we don't have the energy to talk about. First of all, we don't have the energy to talk about all of the Dead films. nor do we have the energy to talk about all the Romero films.
Right.
So there's a problem we got to solve right away in talking about these. I don't really know what to call this. Can we call this The Living Dead? Is that this Killapalooza? Is that okay?
I think The Living Dead is probably good.
Otherwise, we'd call it Night of the Living Dead.
I've heard Living Dead. I've also heard Of the Dead.
Of the Dead. Yeah, that's, I don't like the capital of. You know, this is
then
a problem.
Then put a ellipsis beforehand.
Oh yeah, I'm going to start the show with an ellipsis. That's a thing that's going to happen.
No, I think The Living Dead.
I won't be able to sleep at night, Michael. You don't understand.
I think The Living Dead saga is probably safe.
All right, we're going to call it The Living Dead, and give me the movies we're talking about.
All right, we're going to do Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead, and Survival of the Dead. This is where Of the Dead comes from.
Right, now I understand. Suddenly it's making sense to me. It's an entirely Romero-directed Killapalooza.
If you want to look at it in an interesting way, for the first time ever, the slasher in our Killapalooza is the director.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because we don't have the Phantasm be the... But I think that was the only other time we had same director the entire time.
Right.
Same writer the entire time.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. So we're going to have a whole show about one guy today. That's what we're doing. And we're going to spoil his life. We're going to spoil his films, specifically the ones we're talking about. I'm also just excited if we could talk about the state of the zombie for just a moment.
Uh-huh.
This isn't something that you and I mean, we knew the Living Dead stuff was out there. We were aware of it.
Sure.
It's impossible to ignore. Actually, it's not, because we ignored it for 6 years.
Right.
I think zombies are over. I think that's what makes it finally time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. How do you feel about that?
It seems to be back to vampires. I mean, I don't know if zombies will ever be over.
No, they're not over. Zombies are great, but the counterculture part of me wouldn't allow me to do a show about zombies.
Zombies have found a new home in Netflix.
Oh, sure.
The amount of zombie movies that Netflix not necessarily produces, but that they find and stick on their service is innumerable.
Right.
There's 10 new zombie movies. There have been 8 more zombie movies added since you and I started recording this show. And 3 of them have to do with Nazis.
Sure. I'm excited that we're in a spot where zombies haven't so saturated the culture. They're not everywhere you look anymore.
Right.
I guess I was just afraid of doing the Romero stuff when zombies are everywhere, when they're surrounding you, not in the physical sense. You know what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
Everywhere you look, there's fucking zombie movies. I didn't want it to jade my opinion.
Well, what's really awesome about the Living Dead movies, especially the first two, is that for all intents and purposes, they're the first two zombie movies ever made.
Sure.
Now, George Romero didn't invent the undead. He didn't invent the word zombie, but he invented 100% of the classical notion of what people think of as a zombie today, because there's white zombie, right?
Sure.
Bela Lugosi. Not a zombie, though, just kind of an undead character.
Sure.
But there was no, if they bite you, you'll turn.
Sure.
And you walk like a goober, and droves of the undead permeating polite society.
Right.
That happened. It began, the whole notion of zombies began with Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, and it's strange to think we'd ever be in a place where, I don't know, that seems like one of the few things I've never felt the urge to defend at all. I think you can just say Romero invented the zombie and everybody's right. okay with it.
Yeah.
Even though we all know technically there were other pieces, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Romero invented the zombie. We're sure. fine with that.
Well,
right?
there are things that you can argue. You can argue the origin of the vampire.
And we've done that on the show, I think.
And that goes back through anthropological notions all the way back to the 10,000 BCs and shut the fuck up. That's not what I'm talking about.
Right.
And then we all know where the Frankenstein story came from. And
it came from the third, The Living Dead movie.
Right. Yeah. And The Mummy, you know, all these things that people consider as horror staples. And we've been doing the universal monster
yeah.
thing, which is honing in on what these horror staples are. What's interesting about zombies is that they started so much later.
Right.
I mean, people think of zombies right up there with Wolfman's and sure. Dracula's, you know?
Yeah.
It's Wolfman's, Dracula's, and zombies every Halloween.
Another one of the classic monsters. And can you imagine specifically pointing to one guy who broke that into the mainstream?
And he's still alive.
Yeah, I know. Even stuff like, even creatures like Dracula, you have all of these different points of origin that were mm-hmm. kind of pulled together. And then I feel like, you know, Universal solidified that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Living Dead stuff, it's still true. You still have different points of origin. You have the word zombie and you have the, you know, all of these completely separate things that came before that Romero pulled together in much the same way as the Universal stuff. But somehow, I mean, you don't have a conversation about it without talking about Romero as, you know, the godfather of the modern zombie.
Right.
To think that the zombie is ubiquitous enough in culture that, you know, more people know what a zombie is than who is the current American president.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's fucking huge. It's colossal. It's in, you know, it's a guy who is alive in our lifetime. It's a pretty amazing thing. So there's going to be spoilers, is I believe the point we're getting at there, and use chapters to skip to the films you've seen. Skip over the films you haven't seen, I guess, which is Survival of the Dead, I'm sure. That's the one you haven't seen. That's my guess. Night of the Living Dead is what started it.
Yeah.
Had you seen Night of the Living Dead prior to this?
I've seen Night of the Living Dead a lot of times. I'd seen all of these films before, but Night of the Living sure. Dead, I think I'd seen the most.
Well, so, you know, I mean, I was doing End of State a couple years back, right. like a decade back at this point, I think,
uh-huh.
which was a zombie-centric project. That's the part of this that's relevant at the current in the current conversation. And I was going through and watching zombie stuff to kind of get a sense of, you know, I didn't know anything about it. As you and I have talked about, I wasn't watching horror movies at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I avoided the Romero stuff. And I don't know why, just because it was a big collection of stuff. I wanted to kind of all do it at once, I guess. And I didn't get around to that until this show.
Wow.
So I had not seen Night of the Living Dead.
Wow.
So you would imagine there are surprises for yeah. me the first time seeing this. Just the what the original zombie looks like in comparison to today's
yeah.
modern zombie.
Night of the Living Dead, they're not decaying. But that's the thing, is this is the first, I mean, for all intents and purposes, in the universe of the Living Dead,
mm-hmm.
Night of the Living Dead is basically a case study for the first known person to get back up
sure.
and start biting.
So when we see that first zombie, that person is pretty brisk,
yeah.
you know, using tools. I mean, these were things, having not seen the Living Dead films, I didn't know Romero's mythology. And
right.
given that his stuff was so influential, I just assume Romero did the things that everybody does currently. So I knew the slow zombies, you know, and I knew the stupid lurking zombies. And to see one pick up a rock right away and try and get in the car,
mm-hmm.
suddenly it's blowing my mind. So they could always use rocks? I didn't know this about zombies. I'm finding out new things about the canon. And that's something that's pretty amazing, to think about this like a slasher franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always talk about developing the canon and developing the creature, the monster. But zombies, you know, before I'd seen Friday the 13th, I knew little to nothing about Jason Voorhees, You can't say that about zombies.
Right.
Because they're in all of these other properties. It makes them very unlike any of the other franchises. And then to see the origin point and find out what people have taken from that, or just that's something I'd like to pay attention to as we talk about these movies, is how the zombies change.
Right.
You know, too. So the cause in this is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Venus probe something?
Yeah.
Radiation?
Sure.
What's the deal there?
I don't
know. We just forget that ever happened? Don't pay attention to it?
Well, like I said, come on, Eric. If you're looking at the scope of these films, at which point, I think right around Dawn of the Dead is where you go, I don't care how this started, we need to survive.
That's funny, because that's not what Romero says.
Well,
in Dawn, and then even more so in Day.
I mean,
we'll get to that. But yeah, Night of the Living Dead has this thing no one was even asking for, which was, oh, hey, why are the dead getting up and walking around?
Well, but you have to keep in mind, at that point, people were asking for that, because now, again, we are so spoiled. We go, okay, zombies, given, move on.
Right.
But this is the first time. You have to explain it.
You are so right. I didn't think about that. We're talking late 60s. We're talking zombies have never existed before.
Right.
You're putting a crazy new thing in your movie. You want to know why.
We're talking, I mean, he's making this movie going, I don't know, this is just another. Nobody even watched this film going, oh my God, we need to make thousands more movies about these things.
Sure, yeah.
Because like I said, he made the second zombie movie too.
Yeah, right.
It's not, there's still no clamor to just suddenly churn out zombie flicks.
Sure.
Building an entire fucking section of horror film.
Right, yeah.
With an 80-minute black and white thing where really, I mean, the people who see this film, most of them don't walk away knowing much more than they're coming to get you, Barbara.
Yeah, that was an icon I recognized that had little to nothing to do with zombies.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hearing all these things as we're going through the movies and going, oh, this sounds, you know, familiar. The first movie also really distinct in how it was shot.
Yeah. That,
of course, the black and white part, but also the angles felt a lot like we're talking classic monster movie stuff. Had that kind of noir inspiration, had that kind of German expressionist sort of thing going on.
Sure.
The score, too, being a lot less reliant on, well, I don't know, musical instruments.
Yeah.
And more on often just sounds, being repetitious, being kind of buzzing, being made of a lot of reverb.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I think, about the moment of that scream.
Right.
Which is turned into a kind of a looped piece of music, very mm-hmm. reverb heavy piece of music. Makes everything feel very, it's not a fun, happy place to be.
Right.
Right? I mean, that goes without saying, but you just cringe. You don't like being there. You'll want to get out of that house, but you know what's outside the house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a beautiful element of the tension and the horror here is a lot of times we'll see zombie movies or things where people are attacking the house. And we feel like the house, however temporary, is our safe place.
Right.
In Night of the Living Dead, you know what's outside the house. You don't want to go out there, but there's tensions inside the house. You don't really want to be in there either.
Right.
And every second you go, God, just get the fuck out of that house. You think, oh, wait, there's a bunch of things out there that are coming to get you. It makes everything seem pretty bleak and pretty, I don't know, pointless.
Yeah.
Once they hit that question, man, cellar. Or stay in the house? First of all, where do you fall in that?
Because
you know that's a Walking Dead game-esque decision that you have to make.
When it comes to zombies, we'll probably be able to tackle this question in each film
mm-hmm.
and how the film deals with it. But you can only have a story, a zombie film story, if your characters are centralized in a specific place, usually holed up somewhere.
Sure.
That's where your story happens. But you know why there's no stories of people who are on the road is because they're doing fine and the story is boring.
You think so? You think they're just traveling around, everything's okay?
If you can manage to keep gas in your car,
well, that is the problem. You run out of gas, right. And then you're in one of these movies.
It's like the Chicago idea with our skyrocketing crime rates that if you just ride a bike there, you'll be safe because criminals can't catch you on a bike.
Sure. Right. Keep in motion, everything will be fine.
I mean, recently in Chicago, we've discovered that that doesn't actually hold up anymore because crime is just so rampant and zombies are so good at stopping cars.
Wait, what?
My point being, I wouldn't stay in a house. Houses are the stupidest place to be.
So what you're saying is false dichotomy.
Yes.
You're saying cellar or house, false dichotomy, get me the fuck out. So the movie's winning. The movie is making you go, get me the fuck out of the house.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be that guy who opens the door and goes, oh, wait, fuck, there's zombies. Never mind. Go back in the house.
Right. Well, that's what they would do in The Walking Dead game. Or Resident Evil 1, where you open the door and then cutscene and you slam it. And then the main character goes, oh, too dangerous out there. Back to my other two choices.
Right. Forces you back into the false dichotomy. Brilliant. Yeah, this movie starts with a small group and it gets larger. And I thought that was kind of an unusual thing in comparison to how we'll have 20 people trapped in a house until you dog soldiers the number down. To usually one girl at the end who I don't remember if that's how it happened in Dog Soldiers or not, but you know, until there's a final girl.
So another big thing about Night of the Living Dead, and this has almost nothing to do with zombies, so here we are in our tangents, but Night of the Living Dead is probably one of the most well-known and successful movies to be in the public domain.
Oh, yeah, that's a crazy thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Night of the Living Dead is 100% in the public domain, which has resulted in not only the ability to acquire it and use it and chop it up for audio samples, video samples, stick it on the TV in your movie.
Right.
To kind of give this idea, a reference to, I like old school horror, I like the Godfather of zombies, whatever the fuck.
Sure, sure.
But what it's also resulted in are all these movies where you take Night of the Living Dead, strip the audio and add your own audio.
Oh, interesting.
There's a few movies, mostly parodies and satires that are comedy movies.
Sure.
Where they strip the audio and then add an entirely brand new audio track that's joking and everybody's being hilarious.
Right.
If you want to talk about the idea of people holding on to the copyrights of their art in the interest of keeping it fresh and making sure that it doesn't get tainted.
Right.
Night of the Living Dead is the one thing you just have to point at and go, you're an idiot. This film is more successful than it's ever been because everybody's making it.
Right, yeah.
People put it out. They go, what is this? Oh, it's Night of the Living Dead with a track over it. What's Night of the Living Dead?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll go back and watch it. Oh, how am I going to get my hands on it? Oh, wait, it's entirely available at every whim.
Yeah. Yeah, and also it becomes product placement everywhere else because it's free.
Yeah.
Well, when you think about how big zombies have become, and interestingly, you know, that the word isn't used in this movie, but is used in some of the other films. I mean, I don't, you know, we need a lawyer on this show to really give us some insight into this, but I feel like the fact that anybody could use Night of the Living Dead freely might have made it easier for the zombie to go on as a creature you can just put in things.
Sure.
It's strange to think that zombies being the one type of monster that is attributed specifically to an individual, Romero created the zombie, owns the zombie. Well, it doesn't really own the zombie because everybody uses the zombie.
Right.
You know, the Return of the Living Dead and some of the litigation there.
Uh-huh.
So right when the movie comes out, there's already a spin-off franchise. Mm-hmm. Now two people are doing zombies as franchises. The movie becomes in the public domain, and it suddenly seems like a free-for-all.
Sure.
So I'm thinking maybe that public domain component is something to be considered when trying to figure out how did this spread so widely? How was everybody able to pick this up and use it, and it became such a cultural icon? And part of it, I think you're right, can be attributed to the fact it's free to use. Because the movie became such a blueprint, I think it's hard to get under the surface of Night of the Living Dead. We'll see that in all these Romero movies. What are the movies driving at? What else are they telling us? And with Night of the Living Dead, you really have to think about the core of what is a zombie in order to see, all right, what is Romero's story about? Because in any of the other movies, the zombies have become a fixation at that point. Why are there zombies? Well, it doesn't necessarily have much to do with what Romero's telling us. It's just a movie about zombies. And then you look at the context to see what he's saying. But Night of the Living Dead is truly about the monster. You know, you have these survivors trapped in a house, so you're looking at their inability to work together. But I think more so the movie is about things that are bleak, the inevitability of death, mm-hmm. how pointless existence is, directly tied to the zombie, to the fact that we're all going to die. We're all going to become this. And, you know, I think about that because in the beginning of the movie, before there are any zombies, we're already talking about grief, that kind of, you know, death and tradition, the pointlessness of driving for, what is it, 6 hours or whatever to provide a wreath mm-hmm. and wondering what happened to the one we bought last year. You know, we bought the same fucking wreath. Where does it go? We're talking about the life cycle, right? We're talking about yeah. human existence. We just keep doing this thing and then eventually we die and it's kind of all pointless. And so that's going to come in pretty much every Romero movie, I think. I think that's just built into the zombie.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it's about. Especially, again, in the first movie when we consider the ending. Because we have this. This is probably my favorite ending of any of the Living Dead stuff. You get through this whole escapade. Everything breaks down. There's social strain. There's, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously some kind of racial component. I don't know what it is, but it's 1968 and you have a redeemable black hero. So racial something, something, right? We get through all of that. We get to the end. We survive. We win the conflict. But there's just going to be more conflicts.
Yep.
You're going to have more and more conflicts, man, until one of them kills you.
There's at least 6 more conflicts.
But I mean, that's your whole life. This one didn't kill you, but one of them is going to.
Right.
There's going to be one challenge that you cannot overcome, mm-hmm. and then you're going to die, and it's going to be over.
It's kind of like what we talked about with Wages of Fear.
Yeah, sure. Movies tend to have a story, and you get through the story, and you're just going to live forever. But there's going to be other stories, and you're not going to live through everyone.
Kowalski lived forever.
I don't think so.
Kowalski's the only one who gets to live forever.
I don't think so. So there is there's definitely an atheistic part of me that... There's an atheistic whole of me, really, but part of the atheistic whole of me enjoys thinking about, all right, this is going to end. There is a definite ending to your life. You don't know when it's going to happen. You might make it through this conflict, but you don't win the game of life. You could be shot in the head and roll credits. And the way they do that without any fanfare, this kind of no punch to it, you know? Just this slow, it's wrong.
Yeah.
It's awful. And the hooks and just, you know, people are sitting in their seats in the theater thinking about it. It's great.
So Dawn of the Dead came out a little bit later. And Dawn of the Dead is, first off, it's my favorite one. But I think Dawn of the Dead is probably the most well-received of all of the Living Dead films.
Sure.
I know that it's been registered a million times on countless different top lists of best films ever made. We did the remake of it a little while ago.
Zack Snyder's remake.
But yeah.
Which we also thought was fucking great.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, it's kind of interesting to take something like a Romero classic, redo it, and have a lot of people look at it and go, yeah, you know what? That one was really good too.
Yeah. But Dawn of the Dead is the mall one. Dawn of the Dead also brings to the table a lot of stuff that went on to define horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really seminal stuff. I'm not talking about the idea of, you know, blood. This isn't
sure.
introducing obscene violence to horror movies, although it definitely is a component. But what it did bring to the table is Tom Savini.
Yeah, right.
It brings to the table Ken Foree. It brings to the table the idea of being in a mall full of zombies.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of finding this utopia and just having to work around the zombie problem.
Can you believe that too? It only took one movie.
Right.
You know, we created zombies and then Romero instantly goes, well, so we have this thing. Let's just jump right to the best place to put the zombies that we will never find a better place. And to this day,
right.
the mall is still the right. most interesting place to have zombie apocalypse.
So I was talking to you before we started about how every film to follow Dawn of the Dead in the Living Dead series has a very difficult task of having to not be Dawn of the Dead, and Dawn of the Dead did everything.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to talk about the thematic element of zombies in a mall, mm-hmm. I mean, they touch on it in the film, you know, this, they don't know why they want to be here, but they just want to be here.
Sure.
And especially back, this is before the heyday of the mall in the late 80s. This is when malls were still a fairly new idea, you know, indoor shopping centers, the commercial utopia of entire sects of a state where there's, 10 malls in the entire country, right?
Sure.
And so you go here and you pack it full of zombies who are, they're just people. Who have been, right. They don't even know why they're there. They're wandering around. The sales sure. speaker still comes over, talks about, you know, you can get a free bag of hard candy if you spend $40.
Right.
But this isn't a normal mall either. This is the state-of-the-art mall. It has an art exhibit. It has the robot chicken theme that plays.
Sure.
We're talking the best place to be in a zombie apocalypse. You land your helicopter on the top. You get a bunch of smart people all packed in there. And you set yourselves up, and it immediately brings in the number one causality for failure in any zombie movie, which is other people.
Yeah, right.
Zombies never cause you to lose. Zombies are a single directional factor, and you just have to think, okay, zombies can't open doors. Zombies can't pick locks. Zombies can't break down walls. So as long as we are constantly on the other side of one of those three things.
Back to the ocean, right?
Right. Zombies.
Keep your back to the ocean and you're fine.
Zombies are not a problem.
Yeah.
The problem lies in gangs of Tom Savinis who come in and tear your mall apart. And the problem lies in the idea of your friends getting hurt and you need to make a judgment call on whether or not to shoot them. And the problem lies in a pregnant woman who's only going to hold your team down. This is all in the same movie.
I know.
These are entire bases of zombie films nowadays.
Sure.
There will be an entire movie based on, but there's a pregnant woman.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's the, you know, that's the tension between human elements that we had in Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
This is also furthering that social commentary, like you're saying, the mindless droves at the mall, people showing up in, you know, in mass. And once the humans get in there and they turn on, they really turn the mall back on.
Yeah.
They turn the music on and the lights on. All of the zombies that were there look right at home.
Yep.
I mean, that's the Shaun of the Dead moment. Where you almost can't tell them apart from an actual mall. If I go to the mall today, it looks a lot like the zombies that are there. And so Romero's making a point out of the mindlessness of that, out of the self-serving drive to consume. That's absolutely sure. the zombie. So he's also found another metaphor for his creature.
Uh-huh.
He had the bleak existence. And then it's basically as if he wanted to make an entirely different movie
sure.
about the mall and about consumerism and just went, oh, if only there was an existing monster that really lended itself
yeah.
to this narrative. Oh, hey, wait a second. What about my other movie? But we arrive at the mall and just the setting of that, just seeing it, indoor shopping center, gets me so excited. And the movie just compounds it over and over. It drives that in. We get in the mall, and the first thing we do is go sit at security in front of a giant blueprint uh-huh. of the mall, you know, just soaking it in, turning on the power and the cartoonish sounds that really are completely the opposite of the tense horror stuff
mm-hmm.
from the first movie. Also, and just because it's our show, I want to mention this to you and get your reaction on it.
Uh-huh.
I'm watching this movie. We're watching these things separate now. We're not in the same room. I'm seeing it. I'm going, this is clearly going to be Michael's favorite.
Yeah.
Look at the era. Look at the, I don't know. It's just, it seems like your sense of humor, certainly. And then I'm also watching it and thinking, you know, for everything Romero did for this genre, didn't he also kind of make Home Alone?
Yeah.
I was sort of watching Home Alone a little bit. You know
a
what I mean?
Bit, yeah.
I couldn't help but think, especially as we're sitting in security, seeing that blueprint in the background, I just keep thinking, if we start setting traps for the zombies, then this is Home Alone before Home Alone came out.
Right.
But we're storming the complex, too, in the beginning, before we even get to the mall. It's got that very survivalism, sort of, the video for that, and the year zero military kind of thing.
Oh, you actually meant the Nine Inch Nails song. I was curious.
Yeah, I did. I know I use survivalism like it's an actual word that people would ever have used.
Sure.
No, but all of that military compound, the storm the complex stuff, just that image that would get picked up and be used later. That's the scene in the beginning that also has the Tom Savini exploding head, which if you just want to, I don't know, let's use a pun and say start your career off with a bang.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't think, you know, when I go through the gag reel of Tom Savini moments, man, exploding head from Dawn of the Dead is already right there. You have the gray zombies too, very distinctive, you know, we're changing the look.
Well, they're getting older. They're starting to decay, right?
Yeah, sure.
That's the idea is the thing that's really important to note about The Living Dead, the first four films, is that the first four films embody the chronology of the franchise.
Right.
Night of the Living Dead is the first instance. Land of the Dead is when people lose.
Yeah, right, right.
And Survival and Diary of the Dead happen somewhere chronologically in between. So Dawn of the Dead is the first instance where people are aware that zombies are happening. That's why they call them zombies. It's been established. Yeah. It's a thing now.
Sure.
They're familiar with them. They're not shocked to see them in droves in this mall. They know how to handle them. They know shoot them in the head. They know all these basic ideas. The zombies have started to decay. Now, this doesn't mean that we know everything there is to know about zombies. And most importantly, it doesn't mean we know that they will evolve further.
We don't know where they're going.
Right.
We just know they've been around a while.
Yeah.
We're getting a more specific look at what are they, how are they going to look long term. We establish a lot of stylistic elements, pulling apart the body, pulling apart and eating the body, being very cannibalistic in this movie as opposed to the last one. We set a lot of the genre definers. But yeah, I'm also excited just getting into this movie comes on and there's all the new stuff and that feeling of, I mean, usually at this point in a franchise, we're just looking at it and going, okay, is it going to be a sequel or not? It's binary. But then I'm also really excited about figuring out, is it the same world?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same conflict still? Is it at the same time? Are we picking up, you know, is it going to be the same time as the other events? Or do they clearly know about zombies? I mean, were the events from Night of the Living Dead relevant in this world?
Right.
Then again, the gorilla sample from Demon Days also excites me. So maybe it doesn't take a whole lot. I don't know. So Dawn of the Dead is iconic for all of those things, for the score and the sample. And I mean, so many different samples that are used from this.
The zombie head sunrise.
There's so many different, the thing about there's no more room
in hell.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Right.
Just that startling image, being a lot more poetic too, I think, than Venus. Then, I don't know, there's some radiation or something, Venus, that we instantly go, oh yeah, this one's better. Let's never talk about Venus again. we've had some time to think about this, and let's go with it. And then seeing the news and the every dead body that's not exterminated will become one of them.
Right.
I think I've even referenced that on the show, having not seen the movie previously because it's in that fucking gorilla song.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing I wanted to ask you about is we're getting settled into the mall. We're starting to flip a lot of days on the calendar.
Yeah.
The calendars are going to become big images for these movies. After a while, we get back to normal life. We're just doing it in the mall. Suddenly, we have hit an equilibrium. We're sort of living with, oh, there's zombies out there now. This is just what life's like. And I think a lot of people look at that and go, well, you don't have to work for a living. You can get everything you need in the mall. You've established a little home with furniture you've stolen out of the various stores. What's the point? What's end game for you in a scenario like this?
Well, I mean, I don't know. For me, that's a hard question. I don't think I could ever... I would want to kill all the zombies. I mean, that's always going to be...
But you're talking about 7 billion people. You can't do it.
I know. but
you know what I mean?
I would either, so
does that become what defines your life? Kill all the zombies?
So. Well, I think so. Here's the thing, and I don't mean to just usher this question on into the next film, but I think that the next film answers the endgame question for me.
Please transition me right over.
But before we get into that, we could have gone into a beautiful segue, but there's a very important thing to talk about.
Fuck the segue. Do the point.
So Dawn of the Dead, as we talked about, is pretty much the second zombie movie ever made.
On today's show, there's only six zombie movies in existence.
Right.
Although it's hard not to talk about Shaun of the Dead
so,
all the time, especially seeing Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know, everybody else steals everything from the Romero movies, and Shaun of the Dead goes, well, what about the consumerism thing?
Yeah.
No one wants that one? I'll take that one.
Yeah.
Sorry, what were you saying?
So you noticed that the score, all the music in this film is done by Dario Argento and the Goblins.
What?
Yeah.
Are you talking about?
Yeah. The music in Dawn of the Dead is done by Dario Argento and the Goblins.
Oh, that's a thing I knew from before that I forgot about, and now I look like an idiot.
What ends up happening after Dawn of the Dead is, are you familiar with the film Zombie 2?
Sure.
It's one of the most iconic, good, bad Italian, Zombie versus Shark is probably the most famous thing from Zombie 2. It's hyper violent. It's, I believe it's Lucio Fulci, the other Giallo,
sure, yeah.
The other Giallo name that we know. And it's called Zombie 2 because in Italy, Dawn of the Dead was released as Zombie.
Yeah.
And so to release Zombie 2, it's basically a slant sequel. It's an unofficial sequel that, since it's not the official name of the film, you're allowed to steal it. And you get to make Zombie 2, and suddenly people see it as a sequel to Dawn of the Dead. Well, this starts an avalanche. There are thousands of movies now coming out that are all sequels to Dawn of the Dead.
We have a Django problem on our hands.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But this is the second step in the proliferation of zombies in cinema, which is brilliant, if only because Night of the Living Dead is a single instance of these zombies happening. Dawn of the Dead is the first time it's become widespread, and Dawn of the Dead creates the zombie widespread in cinema in the most ridiculously analogous situation that I sure. can imagine.
Right.
George Romero goes, zombies are spreading, and the world goes, zombies are spreading.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's hard to even talk about the the proliferation of the zombie.
Right.
You just want to say, yeah, the zombies, then they were everywhere.
Yeah.
Then there were zombies all over the place.
Right.
The hordes, they shambled out into, I don't know, into theaters.
Right.
It's
so perfect.
Fucking analogy about analogies. It's ridiculous.
But,
yeah.
But back to what I was saying before about how George Romero's next film deals with the questions. So it'd be very easy now for George Romero to go, I don't know, more zombies. I'm the granddaddy of zombies.
Right.
I can do whatever I want. But instead he goes for possibly the most brilliant cinematic move and goes, well, if you're all following suit, I guess the next best thing for me to do is to tell you all who are now creating zombies,
right,
the next chapter in what happens in zombie evolution. Because that's, of course, what everybody's right. worried about, is what happens when the zombies... Nobody's fucking thinking about this.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
Day right. of the Dead comes out. The film sets up. We get another gorilla sample.
Yeah.
Right off the bat.
M1A1.
Yeah.
Well, can also, I just tell you briefly that I'm kind of pissed about this.
Yeah.
I love M1A1. It's one of my favorite gorilla songs. I didn't know that it was actually just the score.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a fucking minute and a half before any music kicks in that song.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just listening to the gorillas watch Day of the Dead.
Right.
Basically.
Right.
I think they add a, you know, a little guitar
uh-huh.
or something over it, but it's... Even the sample, I thought these were all different pieces coming together.
Yeah.
The fucking hip albatross thing, so much. The Romero films and gorillas. And we haven't even gotten to Dennis Hopper yet.
Right.
And it just seems like the whole thing is, yeah,
so,
coming together.
Yeah, so Day of the Dead takes place in a military underground bunker, completely devoid of any fear of zombies. All right? We've already gone from Night of the Living Dead, which was, holy shit, they're too close. What are we supposed to do to defend ourselves? To Dawn of the Dead, which is, if we're smart, we should be fine. To Day of the Dead, which is, oh, zombies are upstairs. I don't care about them.
Yeah, right.
Go
right.
catch some. We need some for dinner.
Yeah, well, we've been living with the zombies so long.
Exactly.
They're an afterthought. Now we're at the point where we're bored and we're experimenting.
Yeah.
Well, we're going, what can we learn? Survival, totally out the window. Don't even care about it anymore. We've got it.
Right.
Now we're just wondering what we can learn.
And so Day of the Dead, for me, is always the one where the zombies start learning. And we've already dealt pretty heavily with them being able to use simple tools. But Day of the Dead is, and this is 1985, Eric. In 1985, George Romero goes, a zombie can use a gun.
Yeah.
Whenever after that has that been a thing?
Land of the Dead.
Right. But other than, I mean, there's what, Dead Snow?
These were things that people said, fuck it, you know what? We're not listening to you.
Right. Well,
you've gone too far, Romero. We're ignoring the guns.
Dawn of the Dead was so far spun out of control by then. It's possible. I mean, if you look at just the sheer amounts of people who went to the theaters to see these movies, the drop off from Dawn of the Dead to Day of the Dead, because of the saturation of zombies in the market. You already have Return of the Living Dead, the Dan O'Bannon thing. You have, like I mentioned, Zombie 2, all the knockoff, tiny, shitty little zombie movies that are capitalizing on the fear of the horde and pulling the guts out with your teeth.
Yeah.
I mean, Dan O'Bannon is Brains. That's where Brains came from.
Sure.
George Romero didn't and hasn't even touched Brains.
Yeah.
That's not a zombie.
It's just
thing.
Another part of the body to be attacked.
Yeah.
If it's being attacked, it's just because we've exhausted all of the other pieces that were, you know, we melt away a brain here or there. Decapitate a head, do an intruder shot.
Yeah.
That's this one, isn't it? Yeah. That has the intruder head sever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Which was another, wasn't that Savini? I don't remember if that was Savini or not.
It might have been.
I'm not going to credit him for that. I don't know. Well, we had the gray decayed zombies, and now we are doing the more photorealistic.
Right.
The gore becomes a lot more realistic, and I don't just think it's because we, you know, switch decades.
No.
That's probably part of it, but it does seem a lot more. I mean, the last movie was Looney Tunes at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the score just becomes the goofy mall music.
Sure.
We're back into reality now. We're trying to talk about conflicts and human tension and drama. And so we turn on the gore to look like people are really being mauled. Seeing, you know, that last scene where they're tearing apart the villain and everyone is feasting on him. I think that's something that, of all the different icons that people reuse from the Living Dead series, pulling apart a human being, eating a human being, the cannibal exploitation kind of elements of these movies are some of the most powerful ones to me.
Yeah.
Even in Night of the Living Dead, when we're seeing zombies chew on people and it just gets worse and worse throughout each movie, when we get to Day of the Dead, I still think these are some of the most brutal scenes for showing people be cannibalized.
Mm-hmm.
Land of the Dead also does a great job of it too. But I think there's a real focus on it in Day of the Dead.
Well, I think a large part of that is because, as we kind of touched on in Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead focuses even more heavily on the human conflict element.
Sure.
We already mentioned that the zombies are basically upstairs, outside of a fence.
Right.
They can't get them. No fears.
Sure.
But we have this brilliant element that answers the question that you asked me about Dawn of the Dead, which is this militaristic, let's fucking shoot them all in the head. We've got the ammo. Look, I have a machine gun. Juxtaposed against the logical, scientific, if there's only a way we can tame the zombies.
Right.
If there's a way to make it so that they're no longer a threat, we can start rebuilding the world around them.
Sure.
Without having to worry about them.
Right.
And I think that's basically the two camps you have to fall into. You fall into fucking go down swinging, shoot them all in the head, nuke them. We've got everything we need. We can take them out. They're dumber than us. They can't use guns.
Right.
And the other element of scientifically, is there a way to cure the zombie disease, to make them so that they go away? I mean,
right.
Again, this is a false dichotomy because we've seen in other films that there's also the third option of let's wait it out. Maybe they'll starve to death.
Yeah, I guess Endgame becomes an item that is, it's talked about a little in all of the movies to some extent. I mean, the nature of the zombie as a creature, as you think about Endgame, that's, you know, that's the inevitability of death part of it. So maybe it's a more interesting question to go through as we're talking about these movies or visit once we kind of see everything that the Living Dead series has to offer. because it does seem like each movie is giving a different, well, have you thought about this? Well, what about this?
Sure.
What about when we've lived with it so long, we don't even think about it anymore? Is it even a question?
Right.
Do we experiment on the zombies? More and more, we start to get this idea of, can we humanize the zombies a little bit? That's where all of the Frankenstein element comes in.
Right.
So much so that they reference Frankenstein over and over. You know, that's the way they refer to the scientist.
Well, and that also begs this interesting question that I was going to ask you about is, in the process of the attempt of humanizing the zombies, you know, you're doing all these mad doctor experiments on them, and I don't necessarily know exactly where you fall on something like animal testing, but I can pretty safely assume that you're comfortable with animal testing if it means humans will live longer.
You got it. You absolutely got it.
That's my feeling as well. So then, if you're experimenting on zombies in the interest of making them more human, how human do you make them before you're testing on human beings?
Yeah, that's a hard one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it should be black and white. They're dead. They already died. We have a definition of death. But the invention of the zombie, the find that is, we have zombies now.
Creates a gray area.
You want to redefine death, right?
Yeah.
Death no longer means what it used to mean. Because zombies are sentient. In fact, they are more sentient than most of the animals.
Right. Exactly.
That we already put in an ambiguous territory. You know, some people feel okay testing and some don't. But zombies, because they're out to kill you, I think the internal, you know, you have this internal mechanism of survival that says, no, fuck them. I'm going to shoot them. That'll show them. No zombies getting me. And then you live with them long enough and you start to go, well, wait, hold on a second. These are sentient creatures that may feel pain that used to be us. They are the closest animal to human.
Right.
They were once human. In fact, they might be the next step in evolution.
Exactly.
They are the thing we will all become.
Sure.
And so they're not another creature. They're not another branch on a tree. They are just humans. But how much closer can you get to human than was once human?
It's kind of like, and I mean, I don't mean to keep sucking George Romero's dick like this, but it begs this interesting idea that Land of the Dead will, of course, conquer in full swing.
Yeah, you're not allowed to start calling us out on praising Romero too intensely. We haven't even gotten to Land of the Dead yet.
Right.
That's the part where people chapter away from our show.
So before we get fully into Land of the Dead, it brings on up this question that Day of the Dead asks you. It says, so Day of the Dead has this one zombie, Bub, who we've seen can eventually, he learns to use a gun. He recognizes military rank. His humanity shows, right?
Yeah.
He's not quite as dead mentally as we once assumed so, which immediately makes you, or at least makes me go, okay, now, before they were dead, now are we cleansing the raw elements of humanity? Is zombieism potentially this thing that's happening to the human race because we've become too corrupted and we need to simplify? If we're going to re-evolve, you know what I mean?
Right,
is this
right.
basically the human experience going, nope, fucked up, start over.
Yeah.
Resetting to walk, eat, start there. Once you master that, we can move on to other things.
Sure.
And I know that it's a very, again, bleak, kind of monotonous idea to go, humans fucked up, let's start over.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's powerful and wonderful, and it makes it a lot less scary. But at the same time, it makes it more terrifying because you and I sitting here doing a podcast are on the losing end of society fucked up.
Sure.
And so we have to start questioning, well, we didn't fuck up. I mean, we'll be fine. We can take them out and we'll reset ourselves. We're good.
Well, we've taken a creature that was about how bleak things are and how there's only one conclusion and we're all going to hit it. And then we've gone, well, actually, you become a zombie after you die. And if the living humans can train the dead humans to look and act more like the living humans, then we kind of solve the problem of the metaphor we've created.
Right.
It's no longer everybody dies. It's everybody is going to live forever.
Right.
In a state somewhat like humanity, if we can continue this,
sure.
you know, this evolution.
And it becomes terrifying in that suddenly the real terror is so much more human than the initial, scary bloody monsters.
Well, you're also training the enemy.
Right, exactly.
You know, this was the thing that we've totally handled by this point. And now we're going, yeah, why don't we just go ahead and make the enemy a little bit smarter?
And so before...
You know, that's where a lot of the anti-science rhetoric sort of comes from.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate that. That conversation about, you know, I don't know why the stars hold their place in the sky. Therefore, science doesn't know either. And furthermore, no one can ever know. The knowledge is unknowable. And, you know, in that same conversation, they're sitting in their little tiki hut place that they've built out, their little patio.
Right.
Talking about we should take all this knowledge that we've gained and destroy it.
Right.
Not even furthering knowledge, but I mean,
sure.
The knowledge we already have, let's just get rid of it. It's going as far as to kind of say it's evil.
Yeah.
I think it's usually the people who are the perfect combination of lazy and scared that throw their hands up and go, science can never know.
Right.
So you know what? Just you think science knows everything. Science doesn't even know. Let's just not try and solve any mysteries. Let's just give up on mysteries. But here it's also that desire to leave the past behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's a big part of what Day of the Dead is saying. It's talking about this next step, this evolution. And there are characters naturally in that story who are going, which means the old step in evolution, get rid of it. Mm-hmm. We don't care about the past. And I think by extension, also kind of going, well, does that make humans a little more irrelevant?
Sure.
We are the previous step. Perhaps we are no longer.
Right.
I guess we're still needed because the zombies have to come from somewhere.
Right.
But at that point, we can all just be born, die, and then turn into zombies.
Well, which actually brings me to a very interesting, to a technical thing that's going on in Day of the Dead. Tom Savini is back doing all the makeup and creature effects, but he's brought on a guy under his wing as kind of another assistant. And he's being assisted the first time in film by Greg Nicotero, who is now currently one of the executive producers and directors and head special effects director for The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
I mean, Greg Nicotero is now, in today's day and age, he is the next generation of horror effects. He's who you get now because Tom Savini is teaching.
Yeah,
Tom Savini is the old, he's teaching the new ones. He's basically
the master.
He's living out the metaphor that we have just described in Day of the Dead.
Yeah, that's funny.
He's creating the new people to create the zombies.
Right.
But that's not the last time we see Tom Savini. We see him one more time.
Yeah, with leather jacket and all. Love Tom Savini cameos. I also love we're just a couple films later and we're seeing Tom Savini, you know what, 2 decades later.
Right.
Romero comes out of hibernation and creates Land of the Dead, which let's just piss everybody off right away and go, you and I, we haven't had a lot of time to talk about The Living Dead before, you know, warming up the mics and going right into the show. But we both universally on the same page, Land of the Dead is fucking great.
Oh my God, I fucking love it.
Love Land of the
Dead. It's my second favorite one in the entire franchise.
I think that's probably true for me. Much like always happens with us, the first favorite can be a little different.
Yeah.
We have our own picks for that. Second favorite, oh look, the modern one.
Yep.
Romero comes back swinging, has that gritty, just noisy black and white recap.
Yeah.
The classic moments kind of redone, which is great. I am so happy that this film is going on, just seeing that moment.
Sure.
And then we start getting the cast. It's just, I mean, Asia Argento. Okay, so already you win. I'm done.
Sure.
I didn't even fucking remember the goblin thing before, but that's great. But then John Leguizamo's in it. Dennis fucking Hopper is in it.
Yeah.
At the point where Dennis Hopper's name showed up, that was over. It had won.
Yeah.
I was the most excited about this. I get to have Dennis Hopper in another Killapalooza. How the fuck did that happen? And then you get to the premise, which is the most interesting place. I don't know why I wouldn't have imagined Romero was going here. But instead of just going, these damn kids have been making zombie movies for 20 years, I'll show them how it's done. He goes, okay, well, zombies have been, you know, they've been happening since the 60s. Let's just see what's been going on in this parallel universe I created where zombies exist. So he just fucking checks back in on the world he made.
Yeah.
That's all he has to do. He just imagines what a creative, just brilliant, simple, honest. I created zombies in the 60s. That world's still been going on doing things. I'd like to know what's happening there today.
Sure.
I'm going to make a movie about that. And that's another thing in zombie movies. If you're trying to avoid the cliche, what we're always seeing is the moment zombies happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's every fucking zombie movie, is we start the movie and there are no zombies. And then 20 minutes later, we live in a world where there's zombies. And we have to, it's like seeing the origin story over and over and over. Yeah,
it's like watching Superman movies.
I know. I was just thinking, it's a fucking, well, I was thinking about Spider-Man, because as somebody who grew up, you know, reading Spider-Man comics, I've seen the fucking Spider-Man origin story 8,000 times in every medium ever. I don't want to see the fucking origin story anymore. I know it. It's done. I don't care about your fresh new take on it. I just want more stories in the universe. I get sad when we keep rebooting franchises and we have to redo the origin. We can't just play in the universe. So here's an opportunity where it's the middle of reboot season. Everybody's rebooting franchises. Romero comes back.
This is only a few years after the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So maybe we can even give a credit to Zack Snyder, because he goes, no, 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 the reboot's my thing. You just do what you've always been doing. People like that. Why don't you just let us have the reboot territory? And you can step back in and go, oh, the reboot does not kill it. It doesn't make it over. Romero can still go, no, 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 my thing's going on too. I have more story to tell. It kind of gives me hope for all of our poor slasher franchises that have been terribly rebooted. We can just go, no, we can go back to the old timeline, the old chronology. That'll be okay. So we don't do the right as it's happening. We do the story in a world where zombies have been happening for decades. For decades. And what an interesting place to put that in. You make it culturally relevant again. You know, we have these... We have Fiddler's Green, which is basically the mall again, right?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't help but think, as you're describing the super high-tech mall,
yeah,
I'm going, oh, that kind of just seems like Fiddler's Green in Land of the Dead. But we get to talk about things like class warfare.
Yeah.
There's these people living on the streets, doing the dirty work, and then visiting the 1%, visiting the aristocrats. This is Occupy on the street, and then, you know.
And let's also not forget how fucking perfect it is that the film's set in Detroit.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you want to talk about a dead town.
Yeah, sure.
Detroit's been dying for 10 years.
Then the racial elements, too, that seem to have been in every movie, whether intentional or not. You know, we're essentially talking about a gated community. We're talking about class warfare, but this is literally a gated community. It is a fucking moated off community.
Mm-hmm.
It's going, this is the skyscraper of greater human civilization. This is where the upper class lives. And you guys aren't allowed in here for anything more than delivering fucking packages. That's it.
Right.
So these are, I mean, these are timeless things about civil rights we're talking about, and class warfare as well. Then there's the other side of fighting the zombies. And every time one of these movies was coming on and I'm thinking about what is Romero talking about, I'm going, what's happening in the world at the time? And here we're, you know, we're in Iraq. We've just experienced shock and awe as a country. This is the big cultural awakening to, and you remember seeing that kind of infrared footage or whatever it was, the early, early footage of bombs going off in Iraq and talking about shock and awe. Not terribly unlike bombs going off in the sky, distracting the zombies. We're using fucking shock and awe tactics on the zombies. Well,
and the film also, for me, I love that it basically goes, okay, for all intents and purposes, this is where people are. People are dead everywhere else. It's a losing battle, but we've managed to hole up in one of the last bastions.
This is civilization.
Exactly. Yeah. This is all that's left. And we've got it fine. We're made. Zombies can't get in. We've just got these people that go out in this massive battle truck called Dead Reckoning to do all the dirty work, get supplies. They're never going to get hurt because the truck is impermeable. We're pretty much set up. Nothing can go wrong. And this then goes back to reflect on the idea of people underestimating, or either underestimating the zombies or overestimating their own capabilities. Because we get the one element that this film brings to the table that, again, never before seen in a Romero zombie movie, if ever, which is what you refer to as zombie ringleader.
Yeah, right.
So we've already shown that polite society, the society that doesn't eat the living, they're fucked up. They don't have a leader. Their leader's corrupt and evil. He has no interest in the benevolence of mankind. He's basically just looking out for number one, and everybody else serves that purpose, so he keeps them around. That is immediately put up against a character, an undead character, whose sole drive is the proliferation of his species.
Yeah.
He doesn't like to see other zombies die. He knows that the best thing to do is feed them more people.
Sure.
And sure. This is embodied by this character that he's an auto mechanic gas station attendant.
Sure. Yeah.
If you want to talk about somebody whose life has been led in monotony,
yeah,
it's a character who hears a ding, walks out the door, fills a gas tank, walks back in, waits for the next ding.
Well, when he's not creating ports to jack into existence,
right.
I think that's
right. they kind of touch on how they're just again going through the same motions. This is a big thing in the Romero movies, starting with Dawn of the Dead. We get a lot of it in Survival, but the idea that his job was this monotonous, repetitious activity, and they're doing it out of this instinctive habit that's burned into the most basic primal parts of their brain.
Sure.
So what a lot of people, whenever I talk to them about this movie, they shit on it because of gas station attendant zombie ringleader.
Oh, sure.
I think this is a beautiful notion because, one, it juxtaposes the idea of the upper class in Detroit and goes, no, the little hard blue collar worker is the true leader of the people.
Sure.
So you get that metaphor right off the bat. But also, if you want to talk about somebody who has learned their trade, you want to talk about somebody who has been doing their activity in monotony for the longest, it's that guy. He's going to be the first one to pick up something new because sure. He is already well into the zombie mode.
Well, and that shouldn't be such a tough pill to swallow after the last movie was, look, we can teach zombies.
Exactly.
And now we go, well, zombies have been around for decades, and the ones doing the most monotonous things happen to have picked up some new skills.
Right.
And I think they're pretty delicate about
sure.
The zombies aren't all shooting guns and
nope.
You know, nailing headshots.
The butcher's the only one that can chop.
Yeah, right.
Only the butcher can chop. That's a big thing in the movie.
It's this kind of muscle reflex.
Sure.
It's something that actual dead corpses could almost do.
Right.
You know, it's just these spasms they have of learned memories. And I also really like that there's another subclass.
Right.
Class warfare itself is kind of a false dichotomy.
Sure.
It's kind of, oh, there's these people up here who eat caviar up high in the building, and then down on the streets are the real people, you know, as if one life is more important than the other.
Mm-hmm.
I think class warfare is a little bit of bullshit, if I'm not being clear enough here.
Yeah.
I think the people who've got it made and are in the community to instantly go, oh, well, they're the evil humans and the people on the street are good ones. And I don't know if that's what Land of the Dead is trying to do, but it certainly isn't.
Sure.
Because the people on the street are also, you know, stealing and thieving and backstabbing to get by
right.
just as much as the people in the tower.
Sure.
And now there's another subclass.
Right.
The zombie who is under even the street person.
Right.
They're the real oppressed person.
Yeah.
You know, they have a leader and they're just now striking back.
If you look at just the general character profiles of Land of the Dead, the redeemability of the characters is so far below zero.
Right.
Until you start profiling the undead people.
Right, right.
Because you have characters like the president, Dennis Hopper, and then you have your protagonist who is going back on deals and being a dick. I mean, these characters are not good people anymore. Society, for trying so hard to not become zombies, has become dead inside.
Yeah,
that's what this film is saying.
Yep.
It's saying that even in surviving, maybe people have survived, but humans are long dead.
Humanity has expired.
Yeah. And so that's what I love about Land of the Dead is you get, as much as I wish I didn't, and as much as it feels stupid to say, by the time that mechanic goes, wait a second, we don't have to breathe. We can walk through the water and it'll be boss as fuck.
Yeah, and it
I'm kind of going, yeah, the zombies ought to win this.
Yeah, right. It's
the zombies. It's time for the zombies to finally, I mean, at this point, society doesn't need to survive. There's nobody on that. Right. There's nobody on that peninsula I want to see live.
Sure.
The only character I care about is, it's the deformed character. I can't think of his name.
Yeah.
Who is back on Dead Reckoning. So he's safe.
Yeah.
He seems like a nice enough guy. He's not in Detroit. And so when the zombies start flooding in and there's that wonderful fucking line where he says, the exact thing that kept the dead out is going to keep the people in.
Yeah, right.
And suddenly you realize, yeah, society, humankind,
sure,
we blew it.
Sure.
We fucked up somewhere. I don't know if it was in Dawn of the Dead. I don't know if it was all the way back in Night of the Living Dead.
Sure.
Somewhere during the course from night to day, we blew it.
Yeah.
And now all we can do is watch the fireworks while mankind burns into undead oblivion.
Hey, listen, it's not all bad. They had that carnival thing with the boobs and what have you. Right. I mean, they're having fun here and there.
That's true.
Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg showed up.
Right.
So, I mean, they were having a good time.
Uh-huh.
You get some boobs and you get some fingernails falling off. So if none of that other stuff did it for you on Land of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
I think the incredible fingernail moments should be, you know, should be enough. Strap on your handycam. It's time for Diary of the Dead.
Right.
Is that... So, can we talk about found footage versus handycam for a second?
Yeah.
You would consider those two different things, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, this is not found footage.
No.
This is a movie that a film student has made.
Sure.
It's a movie that tries to mimic the look of a terrible first-year film student. And so we have one of the most iconic directors still alive today.
Sure.
Who's been so influential. Making a movie that if you hadn't said that he made it, you might think a film student made. Already really funny to me.
Well, I think the most important message in Diary of the Dead, now I've already discussed, but Diary of the Dead in the chronology of the Living Dead series actually exists right around the time of Night of the Living Dead,
mm-hmm.
Shortly thereafter, slightly between Night and Dawn. So it's actually way back. It's not a sequel in the truest sense to Land of the Dead. Land of the Dead is the end of the whole story. This is another event in the middle of Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, and so I want to talk about that, but maybe we should shelve that for a second.
Yeah, I think with Handycam, George Romero's doing this thing where he's basically going, okay, I did Land of the Dead. Y'all saw that I still got big swinging balls. Or, I don't know, a big iron vagina. That's a totally fine metaphor, too.
Sure.
And now I'm going to talk about what everybody else is doing wrong.
Right.
There's so much. The commentary has shifted so much from social to film commentary.
It's all film and media.
Yeah.
This whole movie is film and media.
And so we get a lot of just the basic, I mean, the thing where he rags on James Gunn for writing Fast Zombies. And... boobs. He rags on boobs.
Which he just put in his last film.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy.
But so this is also important to note. This is the first film in the entire franchise that is his own production studio.
Yeah.
So he probably has total creative control. Also probably
perhaps somebody forced breasts into his...
That's what I was kind of getting
and
at.
And honestly, I think forced breasts are my least favorite kind of breasts.
Agreed.
So all right, Romero. I hear what you're saying.
But he also... in saying he has total creative control, mm-hmm. that is also synonymous with a very tight budget.
Yeah.
You never sure. get total creative control and a lot of money. You never get both.
Yeah. Quentin Tarantino is literally the...
Yeah.
Ricky Gervais did a whole show called Extras about the line, you know, you're on one side or the other. Very few people get to have complete artistic, you know, credibility and be popular and make a bunch of money.
Yeah. So Diary of the Dead ends up being a lot less of the social commentary. And really, how can you after Land of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
after the heavy handedness of Land of the Dead?
Sure.
We just talked about Land of the Dead in a way that made me feel like it was volumes of small printed text.
Yeah. Right.
Diary of the Dead comes at the Living Dead angle from a different perspective. And instead of going, this is... And again, it's brilliant because instead of going, this is what zombies did to humanity, this is going, this is what zombies did to film.
Yeah. Well, and it's a little bit of Romero's take on the newsroom.
Yeah.
Right? He's kind of going, this is media coverage. This is, he's doing this kind of social commentary on the political state and the state of reporting.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff about, it's mostly throwaway references. It's that kind of Bush era leadership, the president's on his ranch, terrorism and terror theater is another big one.
Sure.
They talk about, well, we've raised the alert level for no particular reason. Which they make a big deal of in this movie, but I'm pretty sure that's the only reason we ever raise the alert level.
For no reason.
For no particular fucking reason.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody should be a little more afraid than you were yesterday. Just go ahead and do what you'd normally do. I mean, we have no guidance. Just be a little more afraid. But also the perceived Southern ignorance, which is something you and I have talked about on a couple of shows. I think probably back 2001 Maniacs was the right. first time that came up. That kind of... liberal hippie film idea of everyone in the South is a moron and don't mess with Texas and what an airhead.
Yeah.
And you know, that character does get some shining moments. She fucking wins the day and drives off in the car. So, you know, I don't know, maybe good for her. But then I see a lot of Katrina stuff.
Oh yeah.
You know,
sure.
It's all that Katrina is where people were surviving. Mm-hmm. That was the real survival story happening at the time. I want to say it's around the time. Maybe I'm just completely reading into this. I don't know. But the things like looting, that's what makes me think. I don't even know if the years line up right. But man, were we having a zeitgeist conversation about looting.
Sure.
And about the government treatment of disasters. And that seems to be a lot of what Diary of the Dead is referencing. It's not so much about. It's not like, how do these people survive? Ethical questions about looting. Is it okay to loot in a time of a disaster? It's just, hey, this is definitely happening around here. I think it focuses a lot more on the reporting part, media coverage. Kids are uploading things to YouTube. They're editing their film and they're putting it on the YouTube. I don't know if you got this impression. I'm not going to rag on Romero. I just think it's really funny. The movie does come off like it was written by a man who is 90 and has never used the internet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was
thinking, we're going to edit it on his laptop and upload it to the web.
I was definitely thinking about that. I was thinking about how you can always tell the age of someone who wrote the film by whether or not they call it the internet.
Yeah, sure.
Because you and I are 25.
collectively? Yeah, is that how that works?
Collectively 25. You and I are on average, we're in our mid-20s.
Okay.
And... we're not necessarily the most youthful people to discuss the happenings on the World Wide Web.
Uh-huh.
However, no one ever in the history of anything referred to it as the net.
Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
The last person to do
is
that.
You call, people who call it the net or the web somehow are always the older people. Who go, yeah, what do you kids call the internet? Oh, we call it the internet. No, but what's like the hip jargon?
The web.
We call it the internet. We just call it the internet.
Yeah.
You don't call it the net or the web or the triple dubs.
Yeah.
The dot.
Oh, man.
The dot comverse.
The dub dub dub.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, you know, I talk about the internet all fucking day, right? The internet is just a core part of my social life and my job and everything. And if I am looking for a synonym for the internet, I might say the web less than a 100th of a percentile of a time. You know, it's just maybe pull it off the web. Even so, I probably talk about the robot more as talking to my phone and searching than I do
the
web. I think
the internet, number one, and online, number two.
Yeah, sure.
Distant third, the typewriter with a screen. There's
sure,
nothing.
Yeah.
The web and the net, that's how you date yourself. But it doesn't matter because that's not really the point George Romero's making. I think he's getting the point across.
He's inviting the conversation.
Which is to say that, you know, the internet has, and again, smart, but the internet has changed society. It's connected society. And I think the only thing George Romero's probably regretting is that zombies can't be transferred via the internet.
Yeah,
because if you want to talk about global scale crisis, some virus that turns people into zombies, I'm sure the film's been made since I've now just mentioned it.
Yeah,
I'm
sure
if it hasn't been made.
You're not even going to finish that sentence before. Actually, Asylum will put it out.
Yeah,
it's going to be on a red box before the show goes up.
But the thing that I do really like about Diary of the Dead that has nothing to do with the triple dubs is, well, one, I really like that they show the National Guard team.
Sure.
I like that that shows up because it does a really good job of connecting the next film. But I also like the idea of the panic room.
Yeah, definitely.
The panic room is kind of theoretically the idea that's going around in everyone's head in zombie movies anyway. If only there was a place where we would be safe and nobody could get in,
right,
and we'd be safe forever,
sure,
that would be perfect.
When you're so thinking Endgame again.
Right.
You start thinking, well, could I live my whole life in a panic room? That was the seller question all the way back in Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
The seller seems smarter, but do I want to accept that my existence is now that I live in a cellar and I'm just going to be in that room every single day until I die? That's the panic room. But it does seem ideal at this point. We've accepted it.
Right. However, you get the screens.
Oh, yeah.
And that's never good. That's not what you want.
No.
In a panic room.
No, it's not.
If you're going to go into a panic room, you want to not only be safe from zombies, you want to kind of forget about them.
You want to be ignorant of the outside world.
And that's just
not faced with it at every turn. Hey, here's what you're missing on the outside.
It's not an option in zombies. You can't be ignorant of what's going on because it will bite your face off.
The monitors in the panic room are also the movie. You know, they're the, we're watching everything. That's the, I think Romero is seeing the other handheld films. And the guy must have some kind of interest in cannibal films, too. I mean, Romero has to have seen Cannibal Holocaust, right?
Potentially. I don't know. He seems...
I mean, you have zombies eating each other.
He seems pretty safe. He seems like a safe guy.
He might just watch musicals.
I don't... I
don't go to the movies very often, but when I do, it's because I've created them.
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of the non-Living Dead Romero films, and none of them strike me as a guy who loves Cannibal Holocaust.
Sure.
Knight Riders, Creepshow...
So maybe he's just discovering these handheld movies and he's going, this is an interesting thing.
Right.
It's the same thing with the internet. I give him a little crap because, haha, you're old. It's funny, but you know, we'll be old someday too. It's not, hopefully, fingers crossed, we will also achieve old before we inevitably become zombies.
Or simultaneously.
As we try and keep this dismal show light. But no, I mean, this is a guy who is seeing how technology's evolving. And even if he can't really be part of it, he's inspired by it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he thinks the internet is fascinating, fascinating enough to base his entire movie around how we spread information. And so you see it and maybe you go, all right, this is a guy who's out of touch with the very thing he's talking about. But I'm not of the opinion that the best thing for you to write about is always what you know. I think sometimes it's far more interesting and exciting to, you know, venture into unknown territory. We do that on the show all the time. Venture into unknown territory, see what you learn. Look like a moron in the process and just try and be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
And Romero's going, all right, I want to do a handycam film. I want to see what all these kids are uploading to YouTube. You know, this is really changing how we report on things and how we find information. It doesn't matter that when you lose LTE on your iPod Touch that doesn't actually get Wi-Fi in a moving vehicle. That might be the other film. That the signal doesn't get scrambled like a bad 90s, you know, rabbit ears TV, that instead your clip just won't play.
Right.
I mean, these are aesthetic things. These are all just, we're still learning how to portray that technology in film. The real important thing is we're going, doesn't this give you power now to be able to tell a story instantly and have everybody see it? Look how the zombie apocalypse is different if we're doing the exact same fucking thing as Night of the Living Dead. If we're doing the same thing, but we're doing it today with the technology we have, basically going, how would Night of the Living Dead been different if it had happened in 2005?
Right.
So he makes that. So the thing I wanted to talk to you about that, you know, Diary of the Dead, certainly not one of the most popular of this franchise, but on Killapalooza shows, we see that happen all the time. We never take issue with it. Unless, you know, the lamp one. Sometimes we take issue with it, but never really. Never really at heart. You're making a movie and good for you. But then I do think we've come up against our one Killapalooza cardinal rule, don't do this rule, and that is reboot the franchise.
Uh-huh.
Diary of the Dead's an interesting place. I mean, I bring it up because I don't really know how I feel about it. We're going, yeah, we still want to have an Of the Dead film because those make a lot of money. We don't want to break our franchise. But we're not going to call it Night of the Living Dead because we're not rebooting it. And at first, I didn't feel great about it. But what you've said about keeping it in the same universe,
mm-hmm.
if I can believe that these two movies at the end of the series are in the same universe, I think I'm really happy about that.
Yeah.
I just don't know, is it the same universe or are we creating a new, is this just somewhere else during Night of the Living Dead and we're trying to forget the fact that the years totally don't line up?
I think so, yeah. I think that's exactly what it is. Well, I think that you're supposed to be watching every single one of the films as present day.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you have to keep in mind that for George Romero, he's 80. And Night of the Living Dead doesn't seem as long ago for him as it does for you and I, because we weren't alive. For him, right. You know, he's thinking, oh, you know, that was like 30 some years ago. But it still seems
it's
like
an interesting thing. It's always present. So yeah. If you were to walk into the Diary of the Dead, you could potentially get in a car and go drive over and see the events of Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
It just happens to look like it was in the 60s because that's when we filmed it. But the story, it's a timeless event of something that happened.
Right.
If we were just telling the story like it's a campfire story, they would all be modern day. Right. They would all just be happening today.
Exactly.
It again gets us back to that superhero conversation. We can't remember that the Punisher was created out of Vietnam and never aged more than, you know, a couple years in his entire life. I don't know. It creates an interesting dilemma. And I think we have this cognitive dissonance. We just kind of, it's a willful ignorance. We just ignore it.
Right.
Willful ignorance, the best way to enjoy Diary of the Dead. Let me go on record saying that. Also, not our only flirtation with that. I mean, Halloween Resurrection.
Right.
Saw Handycam stuff was happening and it was interested in it and kind of said, how can we get into that? So then Survival of the Dead opens and, right away, my first thought is, are we doing the first-person narrative again? We have narration.
Sure.
So I'm kind of thinking, are we going to get another Handycam movie? We're going to do two of these in a row. But you're right. I don't want to forget about, before we totally leave Diary of the Dead behind, we do get the characters. They had a scene in the previous film.
Right.
And I think that's one of the fucking... Yeah. I think that is the fucking coolest thing.
I agree.
About the last two movies.
Survival of the Dead actually... For me, I'd only seen this one once, so this was the second time, and it was a long time ago that I saw it. A long time ago, meaning maximum 3 years, because it is 3 years old.
Sure.
The scene in the beginning with the two Irish families,
mm-hmm.
I remember watching that and thinking, wait, is this a prequel to Night of the Living Dead?
Oh, sure.
Because they're on some remote island, and everybody's Irish.
Sure.
And I mean, the fact that it's an island of two,
it's old timey.
I mean yeah, it's old men,
yeah,
you know, with their posses, and it immediately brings up again, this one is very heavy-handed in its thematic element of, okay, are the zombies people or are they a pest? Because we need to know, because this island is going to rest on the fulcrum of kill all the zombies or stick them in a barn.
Right
And so we get this really interesting thing where they go, where everybody who's watching the movies gets to go. Keep in mind, now this falls right in line with Dawn of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody watching the movie goes, listen, buddy, listen. I've seen how this ends. Detroit's going to go down.
Right.
They got to kill the zombies. That's the logical solution.
Which is interesting. We've seen the future now in as far as trying to figure out when did these things take place.
Right. And so the film goes, yeah, I don't know. I don't think killing zombies is a good idea. Let's get that zombie killing guy off this island.
Mm-hmm.
And it presents us with, again, a never before seen element in the Living Dead franchise, which is imagine a world where you haven't been killing the zombies from the beginning.
Yeah.
Imagine zombies started and you go, oh, gotta hide them somewhere.
Sure.
But you can't kill them because they're your family. So it explores everything that happens in Day of the Dead and Land of the Dead, but in a very quickly sped up pace, because these are the original generation of zombies. They've had the maximum amount of time to learn and evolve.
Sure.
We're not wiping them out faster than they can learn to redo their jobs.
Sure. These specific zombies have been around for a long time.
Exactly.
And are also, we're finding, chained up. And you want to talk about that muscle memory thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're literally just delivering mail
and
over and over.
So the film goes on to do the George Romero staple of exploring aspects of the Living Dead universe that haven't been touched on before.
Mm-hmm.
Things like, what if you bite off a zombie's finger? What does that do to you?
Yeah. It's got a little Gremlins 2 vibe. A little... Yeah. People have been asking me these questions. Mm-hmm. Fine, bite off a zombie's finger. Let's see what happens.
And you also get the element of the military element is back with their infinite bullets.
Yeah.
And grenades and an armored truck. I mean, this is basically going, okay, so we have the armored truck and we've got the military. We've got all the stuff that seems like an unstoppable zombie team.
Right.
How do zombies foil this?
Yeah.
It feels like George Romero, while he was writing it or before he wrote it, sat down and read all his notes. He read everything from every previous film and went, okay, so zombies, I mean, eventually they're in the water. So, I mean, obviously some zombies are going to be in the water now, which creates the terrifying notion of don't go in the water. It's full of zombies.
The bottom lake zombies. Yeah.
Terrifying. Uh-huh. Just horrifying.
Yeah, sure.
It immediately makes you backtrack to the ever-present notion of we just need to get in a boat.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that now because it's zombies in the bottom.
Well, especially with, you know, the last couple of years, as zombies became very popular again, people started having these conversations. Mm-hmm. They started having that, you know, which I love and hate at the same time. It's kind of hearing people have the same fucking zombie conversation kind of makes me roll my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I photographed a couple zombie marches in Chicago.
Yeah.
And so you're around a lot of kids talking about zombies and they're all having the same conversation. So, you know, that makes me cringe a little. But to be honest, I love it. I love people playing thought experiments.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's such a healthy, skeptical, just great exercise.
Sure.
Such a science-minded exercise.
That was one of the things that you and I first ever bonded over as friends is when we were standing outside the theater for 28 weeks later. We first arrived at the notion of a zombie on an airplane.
Yeah, right.
That was the first time you and I had ever entertained the thought of a zombie on an airplane.
Sure.
And suddenly we realized, oh my God, zombies are the most terrifying thing.
Yeah. So just because everybody's having the same thought experiment, ones that you and I have had, I mean, I think that's actually really cool when you think about it. I don't know why I have that gut reaction to it, but I love everybody just going, well, how would you survive? What's the best place? Let's imagine we're in a city. Let's imagine we're on an airplane. You know, what if you were in a skyscraper? And the Romero movies have been going through that. He's playing these games too. He's going, well, what if you were on an island? But we know it's always the people, right? The people always get you. What if one of the people was trying to, he was doing a good intention thing.
Right.
The villain in this movie is doing a thing that he thinks he's doing good.
Sure.
He's going, oh, they're people. I want to save them. You know, and that creates this conflict. We're following the military, who we were introduced to in a very negative light in the previous film,
mm-hmm.
and they're very much anti-heroes. I think there's even a fucking anti-hero sticker in the movie on one of the props. It was making me think about it. But we're talking about, you know, these are all human beings trying to get by. No one's really the villain.
Sure.
Everybody's got their ups and downs.
Well, even when O'Flynn ends up on the ferry, the worst that happens is the protagonist pulls a gun on him. O'Flynn pulls a gun back. And the protagonist goes, sure, I kind of like you. And the audience goes, yeah, me too.
Yeah, right.
This is kind of the opposite of the idea of Land of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
where we were talking about how humans have lost the redeemable human factor.
Sure.
This film is packed full of benevolent humans. I mean, on every side of every battle is good people.
Right.
And it's terrifying because the zombies become kind of a strong arm. They're no longer, I mean, we get the idea again back at Day of the Dead where the zombie sympathizers are going, if only we can teach them to eat something that isn't human, that would be the breakthrough we need.
Sure.
But again, in order to do that, you have to corrupt a little bit and go, we need to keep the island pure. We can't have outsiders. Mm. This needs to be a closed experiment.
Sure.
We need the long zombies. We need to know the people who are undead.
Right.
Because we need to be able to appeal to them by using their twins and giving them, you know who these people are.
Sure.
And so when the film ends with the zombies eating the horses, violently tearing that animal apart,
mm-hmm.
we know that this isn't how it ends. We've seen Land of the Dead.
Yeah, right.
We know that because, again, that's what I like about Day of the Dead as well, is this is a closed experiment.
Mm-hmm.
All the zombies that the people that we thought were the bad guys have let survive have managed to evolve in a way that would have bettered the entire existence of all mankind. However, it's on a tiny little island and no one's ever going to go there.
Right.
No one's ever going to find the island full of zombies that eat animals. The vegetarian zombie. That's
sure.
not an appealing thing to mass society because they need to wipe out the zombie menace. Meanwhile, the solution exists over on some little island somewhere. And it's wonderful because we know that there are solutions scattered throughout this thing. And I mentioned in Land of the Dead that when you see society ultimately fall, if only metaphorically, you try to figure out where back in time we fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
We now have a single pinpoint of evidence.
Sure.
One such time was when that survival of the dead thing happened. We fucked up there.
Right.
But that's back at Dawn of the Dead. Imagine how many other pinpoints of scientific evolution and discovery
sure.
we fucked up on because we weren't communicating as a species.
Sure.
You know who is communicating? The zombies. And then you kind of just get that really boss shot of the two heads of the Irish families trying to shoot each other. Because again, they're back on the island. It's their island now. It's back to being sure. their island.
Well, and it pulls in that central theme of us versus them.
Right.
Which is, you know, that's everything in the movie is us versus them. And it could have been the theme in the previous films, but we just weren't really aware of it. You know, it wasn't on the radar. We were talking about a lot of other stuff.
Right.
And I think anytime we're going human conflict, different warring factions, even class warfare, we're talking about the us versus them mentality. Fighting because we always have. You get in a spot where you just start thinking, oh yeah, I just spent five movies fighting zombies. I see a zombie, kill it. And the time to consider, well, maybe Muldoon was right. You know, you see the zombies eating the horse. What does that mean? And even before you know really the implications of it, once you get the idea that, oh, the narrator didn't know, nobody knew, they left the island, you feel like something wrong has happened.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like, oh, we have a piece of evidence. I'm not even sure the implications yet.
Sure.
I mean, now as we're talking about it, you kind of get where it's going. We can humanize them. We can have a relationship. They don't have to feed off people. We might have solved the problem.
Right.
But before you even reach any of those conclusions,
right.
you just have a gut feeling that, oh, there's more data and no one's going to know about the data. Wait, someone should know. I don't know why this is important yet, but someone needs to know. For one of the first times, really, you sense Night of the Living Dead, you get that bleak ending of, oh, we came so far. We had made it, but we lost.
Right.
So we hit all six of these, and we are kind of visiting the point throughout the show. But I'm curious now if you, do you think you have a different viewpoint about what is Endgame for you? The Endgame question is the big one for me.
I think that there's got to be some scientific rationale for either, and I mean, even if it's a vaccine, something that will prevent zombies from being the end game.
So you're interested in the cure?
Not necessarily the cure, just I'm interested in a world where people don't have to fear zombies.
Sure.
And where we don't have to try to annihilate all of them. Because even Romero mentions that it's not if you kill them all, there never will be more.
Sure. Well, that's one of my favorite things about the Romero stuff I didn't know. You know, I don't know if everybody knows this. You know, they bring this back up through a couple of the movies. That's part of Romero's zombie mythology, is it's not about the bite. It's about the death. And not the death after the bite, but just about dying. You know, this is, I feel like it's pretty unique, especially given the influence of the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
It's so not the norm. The fact that everybody who dies will become this is just what's going to happen. And I think that's so not the norm for zombie mythology that it's even a plot twist in a fairly recent zombie property.
Right.
You know, this idea that we're all going to die and become one of them. The famous every one of them that's not exterminated line. I mean, that's kind of what it's talking about. But still, it's just it's a really unique thing. It feeds right into that oppressive, you know, everybody on Earth is becoming a zombie. They're going to overwhelm you. That's the scariest part of the zombie thing.
Right.
That it's going to be overwhelming. And if you go, you know what, I'm going to beat the zombies. No one really beats them because we're all going to die. And when we die, we're all going to become zombies. That's just what's going to happen. And how better to feed into thinking about the inevitability of death than to go, you know, this thing you're running from, it's going to get you. You're going to die. You're going to become one of them. In fact, it's even better being a zombie than trying to avoid death, because you can avoid being a zombie by taking out the brain. You can't avoid death, which is what Romero's getting at.
Right.
We're all going to die. There's no bullet in the head to fix death. It's coming for every one of us. And every single film you see where people are running away from death, they're running away from zombies. The zombies are just going to win in the end. It doesn't fucking matter. So thanks for that bleak nihilistic point, George Romero. And we have a website, doublefeatureshow.com, email address, doublefeatureshow@gmail.com. I was thinking about it a lot, you know, sitting in the mall going, what if you didn't have to work? What would you do? And I'm definitely, you know, I'm not one of those people who works because, oh my God, I have to get a paycheck. Otherwise, I'd sit around and do nothing. You know, I'm driven to solve problems. I want to do things.
Right.
I think a life in the mall would drive me nuts. It's very ambitious to go, I want to solve the zombie problem. And I think it's really cool that you even think about that. I thought a lot as I was watching these movies about creating communities or rebuilding society.
Uh-huh.
At the point where you've given up on solving zombies, I'm too stupid to do that. Honestly, I could not solve zombies. I might be able to get together the team that
right.
solves zombies, but I'm too dumb. It's not in my skill set. But I could maybe help rebuild society. And I think that's a fucking cool thing.
Yeah.
To look back on your legacy and go, well, what did these guys do? They helped reform society after we realized we need more time to solve the zombie problem and we may never solve it. And you know what? Living in the mall doesn't give people a lot to live for. When you're faced with all these bleak themes, I think that's one of the things that makes me think about an endgame is to go, well, yeah, it's very much a real life problem. We're all going to die, but I don't know. Can't we do something important before we get to that?
Right.
What I'm getting at is Lucas Duvall, Enrique, Mike Shaw, Duss, and Eric Tachek have created a legacy by funding our show. And now there's this permanent thing on the internet. Once we have all turned to dust or aliens have reclaimed the planet or what have you, they will look at Double Feature and they will say, how did this come to be a thing that lasted over 6 years? And they'll look at these fine names from these folks right here.
And then they'll say 5 stars on iTunes.
Yeah, and then they'll give us a bad review on iTunes is what they'll do. Fucking hypothetical alien society always being. Sorry, what?
This has been heavy and this has been horror. So we're gonna kind of get away, but we're actually just going to spring right back next week on Double Feature. We're going to do some horror prose, doing some goofy horror comedies.
Right, sure.
We're going to cover The Frighteners and Memoirs of an Invisible Man by our good friends Peter Jackson. And have you heard of John Carpenter? Because he did Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
Stop it. Stop it.
This is a good Killapalooza.
Number 20 and long awaited.
Watch more fucking film.
Bye.